Drink in the shoulder. All right, ladies. Up, 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 up.
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to the Faster Skeeter Podcast. In this episode, we track down Alaska Pacific University skier and Fairbanks, Alaska native David Norris. At 25, Norris appears primed for more domestic podiums and potential starts on the World Cup. After a down 2013-2014 season where he suffered the ill effects of a lingering virus, Norris proved last winter that he's on the mend and finding his groove. His top form shape, which he illustrated late last winter with a string of Super Tour victories, was on display again this summer when he posted a record time in Alaska's famed Mount Marathon running race. The topic of Mount Marathon is where we'll start off the interview. Did you actually specifically train for it and preview the course a few times, I suppose? And were you surprised by that result?
So I did go camp in Seward for a weekend a few weeks before the race. I went to the top only once, but I did a few laps of the lower section where there's more, I think there's more danger and more importance on knowing, you know, the specific route you want to take. So I practiced that a few times, but I didn't change my training for it. I think what we were doing as a team was really good, you know, like uphill bounding and uphill roller skiing, like majority of what we're doing is uphill training, so it was good prep for the race. And going into the race, I knew the uphill record, and I was racing with Scott Patterson, and he was pretty aware of the time and had thought about what we were capable of, and he had helped me have some confidence in knowing that, like, we can win to the top and set a good time to the top. And so that kind of just became my goal, because the downhill wasn't unknown for me because I haven't really raced a downhill race. And it was also high risk. And I didn't really want to, you know, put any pressure on myself to run a fast downhill and put myself in a position to maybe hurt myself.
Yeah, right. I mean, you have a whole winter to jeopardize there.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll just race hard to the top and try to prove to myself and my competitors that I'm the fittest guy today. And then the downhill will just take care of itself, and hopefully I can hang on to a good position. And I think that was kind of both Scott and I's game plan, and him and I ended up leading, and we had a good race to the top. So,
well, you must have smoked the downhill. I mean, I not having really looked at any splits or anything, but at the point where you realized that you could win, did you start to kind of take some risk, or just kind of keep things in check but stay fast?
You know, once I started feeling like I could win and I saw my gap that I had coming towards the top, I think I had a pretty good adrenaline rush and, you know, excitement. And like, when I'm having good days, often it doesn't hurt as bad as the hard days. Like, I'm pushing just as hard, but there's so many positive vibes going on. And so as I came into the downhill, I just remember being really focused. And my first few, like, seconds on the scree running downhill hard, I remember hearing myself being like, whoo, all right, like I'm flying. And I was still in my comfort zone. It wasn't too out of control, but there's a few spots where I knew where there was like a little drop or a technical spot where I'd ease up just a little bit to make sure I didn't come ripping into one of those more high consequence spots and, you know, like trip on my face.
People who say live in Europe and a few individuals here in the States can make a really decent living as, you know, professional mountain runner. Did this pique your interest after that? You're like, huh, maybe this is something I could transition into?
Yeah, for sure. It's made me think a little bit. After the race, Ricky Gates gave me a little inspirational talk about how there's definitely a career in mountain running if I wanted. And my goal right now is still just skiing and focusing on 2018 Olympics. But it does intrigue me, the possibility of being able to use mountain running to maybe help allow me to stay in the sport and use mountain running to make skiing a little more feasible. And I feel like you could do both, not a full-time mountain running career, but, you know, using some of the mountain running races as good training. And then maybe if you wanted, you know, transition into mountain running when you're ready to move on from skiing. But right now I get excited about mountain running races and thinking about them, but after a day or two, my focus is right back to just skiing.
You grew up in Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And some of, and maybe you can rattle off the names of the folks that you ski with at APU who were a year or two either older or younger than, but you guys all skied or competed against one another regionally. So there's yourself who grew up in Fairbanks. Who else is there?
Reese Hahnemann and Logan Hahnemann, and then Becca Rohrbaugh as well. And then in Anchorage, there's Lex Trinan, Eric Packer, Tyler Cornfield, Scott Patterson.
You know, when you guys were growing up together, did you keep an eye on their results and sort of check in occasionally about each other's progress?
I would say, you know, through high school, people weren't promoting, like, using social media as much in the summers. So I wasn't concerned or following anyone. But when people started heading to college, and for example, when Eric Packer was skiing for the Stratton Club, I remember, you know, like Stratton would post a picture from some workout. I would see it and someone else would see it and they'd be like, oh my gosh, looks like Packer's training so hard. I bet he's going to be super fast this year, you know, things like that. And then Reese would be like, oh, but we're going to do this workout at Pearl Creek or whatever. There was some of that going on, but I wasn't in touch with anyone other than Reese, Lex, and Tyler kind of through the college years where we all went different ways until we all came back together. And then it's kind of cool. I think we were all good friends at competitions when we were at the same place at the same time. And then we kind of went different ways and didn't stay in touch. But then when we all got back to Anchorage, we were immediately all good friends at practice and outside of practice, which I think is pretty cool for us.
I want to talk a little bit about your years at MSU, at Montana State. And you had mentioned that you really struggled, and I think it was the year 2013, 2014, where you suffered an illness. And can you talk about that a little bit, how you struggled and, you know, really what it's taken to kind of build up your reserves again?
The summer leading into my senior year at MSU, I joined APU to train and had a really good summer of training and was pretty optimistic going into that season. But then in sometime early October, I caught a cold and then it just never let up. And then it turned into some kind of chronic virus where I'd be healthy for a few days and then I'd have a harder workout and be sick, or even exams, or you know, stress from school, or just life stresses. If I had an argument with someone, it would turn into this like sore throat pretty immediately. That went on all the way through March, and I just had to back it down and make my winter like 30-minute walks, and I'd do some 30-minute like ski touring and get like at least a lap of a short run of downhill skiing in, just to like, I was like, well, it's good for my mind and skinning's just about as easy as walking. So
at that point, what winter is that?
That's the 2013-14 winter.
Okay.
And so I didn't compete at all. I didn't do any races. I went to West Yellowstone hoping to race. And then Eric Flohr and I sat down and talked and he was like, you're a young athlete. If you're not 100%, don't risk it. Don't turn it into like, you know, the viruses that escalate and, you know, end up ruining people. But then I raced spring series and NCAAs and that went well, or as well as it could for not really racing all winter. But the next summer I started rebuilding and you kind of see it, like I had a good summer of training, but then as soon as the winter season rolled around for the 14-15 season, it was 2 weeks of a cold, healthy for a week, 2 weeks with a cold. And it was pretty roller coastery. And I was just super unstable and getting sick almost any weekend that I had two races back to back. And so we kind of made a goal last summer to kind of stabilize my training and not kind of tap into the adrenaline and like the max efforts so often. Because being on a team with so many guys and they're all really fast, it's easy to want to race and stick your neck out every workout. I had to start telling myself to hold back and kind of save my reserves, because I think what it came down to is, you know, I don't know about the medical term, but like people are saying like adrenal depletion, I was just kind of tapped out. And so by the time winter rolled around, I didn't have, you know, much energy in me to stay healthy and race fast. Kind of changing my plan for last summer led into last winter, the season, I didn't have like any illnesses because I was healthy. I think I got stronger through the season, and each race worked for me to like make me stronger rather than causing me to get sick and have to rebuild. That's kind of my goals this summer, is to continue on that track and just keep stabilizing my health and improving my base fitness.
Jumping back to last summer, where it's in a, hopefully I get my timeline straight here. So last summer, where Eric was like, look, moderate your efforts, you know, and I can imagine that group of guys, like almost every day, even when you're going easy, all of a sudden it's like, what's the pecking order? So when he's articulating to you to keep yourself in check, you know, you had a really successful year last year. Is that still what you guys are doing this summer? It's like still keeping it in check, and on the days when you're supposed to give those big efforts, make sure you have the energy for that? Or are you sort of free to train as everyone else would train this summer?
I put a little emphasis on not going, you know, max effort, you know, laying it down too many times and just summer training. And the reason I actually signed up for a few of the mountain running races, like by signing up for those races, it kind of gives me a little assurance that I can go a little easier in these workouts during my standard blocks of training, because I know I have a race coming up. And it's not that I'm saving anything for the race, but it kind of lets me blow the steam, or it keeps me in touch with racing and helps me to not race and training, basically.
That sounds pretty wise.
Yeah.
Use that as kind of a valve.
Yeah. And Flora, you know, kind of had to tell me, you know, like, you know, it actually takes confidence to get destroyed in a workout, because, you know, like I could grit my teeth and maybe stick right to the front, you know, with the lead guys. But on some days, like, that's maybe not the best thing for me. And mentally, it's tough to be like, well, I'm getting crushed today. But you're not actually getting crushed. You're just doing the pace that's appropriate for you. And in the long run, it's going to make you stronger if you're accomplishing the goal of that workout on that day. It's taking a little practice to get used to.
You know, coming into last season, it sounded like you had your energy. And can you talk a little bit about some of the highlights? I know that you won your first Super Tour last year, I think in Lake Placid. Yeah, can you describe that and if that kind of caught you off guard a bit?
I've been pretty close to winning several Super Tours and U.S. Nationals, but I've never been, like, I've always been like, why I'm not clutch or something, you know, like, should be able to take it. But finally in Lake Placid, it was a skate sprint, and I think I qualified like 25th or something. And often I qualify better than that, so I didn't really think it was going to be a great day. But we'd done some practice runs on the course the day before as a team, and I kind of saw that there was some tactics that were working out really well amongst our pack. And so going into the first heat, I kind of had a game plan, and I knew that the draft was strong on that course. And every heat, I pretty much ran the same tactics and was able to come from pretty much the back to the first place position each heat to advance. And I made my first A final ever, and I was like pretty stoked about that. But then I was like, all right, I've made it. You know, like my goal is not done. Got one more race. And on the final race, exact same tactics, probably worked even better. Like I perfected them. And so for the final, I came from behind to move into first with like 50 meters to go. And as I came into the final shoot, I was like, if I can just not crash, I can take this. So I just focused on, you know, having clean technique and skiing relaxed. And I was able to hold off Eric Packer to win that. And that was my first A final, first Super Tour win. So it was pretty sweet. I was really excited. And yeah. And unfortunately, Tyler Cornfield, he crashed in the A final. So, you know, we were hoping to, you know, see if like in training, like we can do an APU sweep. We almost had that maybe, but Tyler went down, which made my life easier potentially. But
do you consider yourself a sprinter?
I definitely don't consider myself a sprinter, but it's always kind of been a goal that I've set for myself to be a good U.S. domestic sprinter. My club coach growing up had kind of burned it into my memory that if I want to be a good World Cup racer in Europe, I should probably be able to be a good domestic sprinter in the U.S. just because of the, for mass starts now, the way they sprint, you know, the last K is really fast. The better I can get at racing sprints in the U.S., it's going to just help my skills when I do World Cups. Because of that recommendation, I've always tried really hard and focused on sprint workouts and some of the sprint training. You know, I've never blown them off and been like, I'm a distance guy. I don't really need to worry about this.
The beginning of the season was a lot different than the end. So if you can kind of describe that uptick towards the end, I think you won 3 out of 4 of the Super Tours leading into the Ski Tour Canada.
Early in the year, I went into the season healthy and fit, but I didn't actually pull off any of the results I was planning on and, you know, hoping for. I was just constantly just like a small margin off of doing well. I had great skis. Like I just had no excuses. So it was a little frustrating, but after nationals, everything, it started to click a lot better. I won both races in Lake Placid and then did some fist races in Minneapolis. And I got second both days there and then won the Berkey. And so I was feeling really good and it seemed like my fitness was getting better and better. And then there's actually a big break there because I didn't qualify for the World Cup in Canada. I actually ended up back in Anchorage. And so I did the Tour of Anchorage and just started prepping for Spring Series. Spring Series almost felt like the beginning of the season again because there was such a big gap from the Berkey to Spring Series that I almost felt flat. But as we did more races at Spring Series, I started to feel sharper and had a good relay leg. And then the final race of the season with the 50K, it didn't feel exceptional, but it was just a slow, like long, hard day. So, and I got third there, which is cool to get back on the U.S. podium after like 2 years not being able to get that.
When you have guys in that 50K race that, you know, you have the whole top end of the U.S. skiers that are attending and are pushing, you know, Noah Hoffman's there, Eric Bjornsson's obviously there. How is that race different than, say, U.S. senior nationals in terms of the level of the pace?
I think it tends to be a little sharper. I'm not sure if this is true, but it seems that if Noah Hoffman's in a race in the U.S., he tends to, at some point, go really hard and just try to shell everyone. Just, you know, kind of like, I'm fitter than you guys and I'm just going to like run off the front. And so I think he tends to put in a really hard pace where sometimes when you're just racing Super Tours or U.S. Nationals, there's not as many guys who are that confident. So sometimes the pace is pretty conservative through the first 3 quarters of the race where, but I'm not sure about that. That's just kind of the memory and feelings that I get from racing at Spring Series when we have the U.S. guys back in the States. But I think it's great. It, you know, ups the level of competition and there's a little more pressure because some of the guys coming back from Europe, they want to perform well, show that they belong on the World Cup, like Erik Bjornsson did, you know, to win that race. Just because maybe these guys are struggling on the World Cup doesn't mean that they stink in the U.S., you know. It's cool when they come back to Spring Series and, you know, win the event. So you're like, well, so maybe a 50th place or 40th place is pretty legit on the World Cup because they come back here and Noah won the 15K and then Erik won the 50. So it's another good gauge for us to be like, well, we got to be able to compete with these guys if we want to be able to be successful on the World Cup.
You know, speaking about that, you know, when you started to feel good, say middle of last winter, and you realized, you know, you had, I guess, a different gear and a sharper gear, and you could start winning races. And then you could stream the Berkey live this year. And so that was super impressive. I think you just sprinted down by yourself, but there were maybe an Italian or two or a French skier behind you. Is that right?
Yeah. I think with a kilometer to go, I think there might've been six of us, and I was the only American in the group.
And maybe even particular after that race, you know, how closely, I suppose all of you at APU and across the country, you know, elite skiers are looking at the selection criteria. How closely were you scrutinizing that selection criteria when you realized that you were Ski Tour Canada fit? I'm assuming you felt that way just because you were skiing super strongly heading into March.
Well, you know, some guys have the criteria memorized, and I've never been that person, but I'm usually pretty well informed because my teammates are really aware of the criteria. But I knew that I hadn't qualified, and I did feel, you know, some emotion about, you know, like that I wish the criteria had been better or different, because I did believe that I was coming into form and racing better and better leading into the tour. In my head at that time, I was thinking, well, they should have a criteria set up to pick who's skiing strongest at that time, leading into an event that you're trying to qualify for. But the criteria wasn't set up that way, and I was aware of that. So I didn't really feel sorry for myself that I didn't qualify. But after the Berkey, in the back of my mind, I did have a little hope that maybe somehow they would name me to the World Cup team. But I got an email from those guys saying that I was close and that they're, you know, excited about my results, but that I wouldn't be going to the World Cup races.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that there's an open dialogue between U.S. ski team coaches and Erik Flora for obvious reasons. You know, how did Erik advise you last year and over the course of your tenure at APU how to approach selection criteria? Because it can become, I guess it can cause athletes to really, you know, peak for certain races or modify their training and then their race schedule so that they can perform best for getting selected. I'm just curious how you guys navigate that and the criteria document.
Flora doesn't have us, you know, dwell on the selection criteria. And while he might still schedule and focus races that we, like at these five races is where we want to perform our best, for the most part, he's kind of used the selection criteria and the feeling that you kind of need to ski well most of the season to earn a spot to Europe or to these teams that you're trying to qualify for. And kind of what I've learned from him is that you just have to train really hard all summer to build a big enough base to be able to hold a high level of performance all season long. Because like what I used to experience when I was younger was that I could ski really well for a few weeks, but I couldn't actually hold my high-end racing form for all that long because I didn't have the base to maintain that. So Erik really just tells us to try to race fast all season and to focus on a few of the important ones that like US Nationals, which for obvious reasons are important ones for getting selected teams. But like the Super Tours, you know, those ones are often play a big role as well. So you have to be skiing fast from November through February if you want to earn a spot.
What are your goals for this upcoming season, knowing that you finished so strongly last year?
Like a general goal is just to turn my exceptional results into the normal day-to-day results, and then have my exceptional results for next year be even better, you know, that kind of thing. But just trying to get more stability and to be able to start racing better sooner and still build through the season. And if I could race well from the start, I think I could earn a spot to the World Championships team. And that's my goal for next winter, is to go to Lahti and, you know, ultimately make a spot on the US ski team and then compete on World Cups all season long and then make the Olympics in 2018.
Well, great. Well, thanks for your time, David. It's been nice talking to you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the David Norris episode. And please email me at jason@fasterskier.com if you have an idea for an interesting interview. Thanks.